You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Some call me Sally, others call me Seisha. If you don't like it, I'm gonna have to beat ya. Nah, I'm just kidding, y'all. Y'all, YNLL. I bet you all thought that Seisha couldn't spell, but now you know, and I got to go. Hey, it's time for the Seisha Show. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Seisha Show. I'm so excited to sit down with another castmate of mine. Literally, my cast is amazing. Like, the people, the souls, their hearts, their hilarity, and today is no exception. My guest today is a film and television star. She's a singer and a dancer. She's also, which I didn't know, an acting teacher and coach, and what I did know, a yoga queen. She was in American Psycho, as well as a million like other theater projects, and now she's originating the role of Princess and the Pea in the new musical Once Upon a One More Time. Please help me welcome the one, the only, the comedian, Morgan Weed.
Seisha, that is the nicest intro I've ever received in my life. Can I bring you everywhere with me to just hype me? Because I feel amazing now. I feel like
literally
$1.
That's your hype, man.
Having me.
You are so freaking funny. Like, can we just talk about it for just a second?
Coming from you, that is such high praise because you are so hilarious. One of the funniest people I've ever met in my life. And thank you very much.
Really? You're funny off the stage and on the stage. Like, Andrew just saw the show. It was his second time, but I was sitting next to him for part of it this last time. And you open your freaking mouth and he's just like...
He was hyping us big time. I told you I saw him after the show, and he was giving me life. And sometimes, you know, in these long, amazing weeks, I feel super happy and privileged to get to be working right now and to be back after the pandemic. But there are nights when we're feeding off that energy, and he was more lit than anybody on the stage proper. So I'm grateful. Thank you for having such an amazing partner who supports not just you, but your friends and your colleagues. It was amazing. But no, it's this show really is so special and close to my heart. I've been working on it since 2018. And I feel like I have been through a journey with this show, as so many of us have. My part has evolved from being teeny tiny to being enormous to landing kind of where she is now, in this wonderful like middle place of I get to really represent what I think is like the style of the show. And I do my job to really support the narrative along the way and bring some comedy to what is a really meaningful and important story. So, but I also, because I don't carry the show on my back as one of the leads, I get to be such a weirdo. Like, I have full full freedom to be so weird.
I'm so good with you. Like, truly, like, you will be in the middle of what, like, Aisha will be singing Bottom of My Broken Heart, and I'm like, Andrew, look at Morgan. Look at her right now. Literally in a black band.
A crab position over on the side, just drunk.
Just so drunk. Every time you enter the scene, like tripping over the chair, me and Diana are like, she's wasted.
Well, the funny thing is like, you know, I'll try something, and I talk about this. There was, I love David, our creative consultant, talked to me about this thing that he says Alan Rickman used to say, who was a friend and colleague of his and who recently passed. And I'm such an enormous fan. I mean, the original, like Robin Hood with Morgan Freeman and Kevin Costner, is like, I don't know why, but one of my favorite movies of all time. I know it's weird, but I love it. And anyway, he would talk about how Alan Rickman would say this thing when he would get feedback in a show, and they would say, he would say TTFN, which means take the F-bomb note. And I really, really appreciated this because I feel like I spent so much of my career being, you know, thinking probably too deeply about what I was doing and feeling like it was so personal when something needed to change. Like somebody gives you a note and you go, oh, I don't know. Like, am I even a value anymore if you don't want me to do that joke I did? And, you know, because as you may know, or maybe this is true for me, I fall into the category of comedians who are like part of, I think, where my comedy comes from is my hypersensitivity. And I mean that in the good ways, like I feel everything. And then I mean it in the terrible way, like I feel everything. Like
you feel everything.
If someone looks at me wrong, I'm like, oh God, I'm in a spiral. And then at the same time, I'm like, ooh, I can use this. Like the,
You do
notes about that scene, about the chair. They'd be like, you know, but Mari was like, we love when you tangle yourself in the chair. And David was like, you know, John's giving you carte blanche, so go for it. He's like, but you didn't hear it from me. And I'm like, so it's been really fun to be supportive in this way. And then sometimes they'll be like, roll her back, Morgan, roll her back.
That's so great to have to be told to roll her back. Like it is, I think it can be a hard thing to originate because you have to be so confident in yourself. You have to really follow your instincts. And one of the reasons why I said yes to being a swing is so that I can watch people firsthand up close. I've got a front row seat watching you, how you're able to follow your instincts and go for it. Like I want to be there one day, but I know that I want, when I'm there, I want to like do the freaking thing and not be so scared to make a choice. You make choices in your sleep.
I do make a lot of choices, but I do want to say that I've watched you now come on stage with us, and I have watched you create original moments, original pieces, original characters out of these characters that you only get to step into sometimes with like 12 minutes notice. And you know, it's totally wild and really inspirational to me because I've gotten to spend a lot of time with P, my character, and I'm figuring out who she is and what makes sense and letting go of some of the little vestigial tales of scripts past and iterations past, and remembering always to bring myself back to the line of like, you know, sometimes if I'm like, I put a hat on a hat on a hat, I'm like, take those hats off, just make the one joke. Someone else is making a joke now. Be quiet, calm your face, you know, and remembering all of the technical elements of comedy. Cause I think, the highest compliment I ever got was from this director that I worked with. And I did a show with Amy, our magical Goldilocks in Chicago.
Amy Hilder Larson.
The best. She is comedian extraordinaire. And I was doing this show and there was a comedian and we had worked together before and we're really different types, you know, genders, ages, everything. And we weren't vibing. Like we were, you know, and which happens sometimes, you know, and it wasn't like it's not a show stopping event, but it was trying to figure out that balance. How can we make the best thing if both of us feel like the best thing looks really different? And it was a huge learning experience for me because the director said to me, in talking to me about it, he was like, you are like a steel trap technician, meaning you like, and he was right. I work a joke. I run it in my head. I listen to the timing. I think of it like choreography, you know, and by planning and planning and preparing, then I feel like when I'm in the moment, I can let fly whatever actually happens live. And a lot of comedians don't work that way. A lot do. But a lot kind of feel more of the improv world. And, you know, and I certainly do my fair share of improvising, but it's always like kind of knowing, like, I have my set list of facts. Like, here are the things that have to happen in this scene. Like, we have to establish clumsy and erudite, you know, meeting here in person. We have to establish that we're all, that the narrator has power in this scene, and that we all have a fear of this, of the same thing, of being banished. So I establish my like givens, and then I go, okay, what's it look like to be in that world intoxicated? You know, and I actually don't even drink. So it's like, for me, it's also-
You don't drink in real life.
No, I don't drink in real life. So I, you know, the old voce and everything, and just my sort of, I'm on a, that clean living vibe. And I, so I don't partake in any of, in any of the extracurriculars. And so I have to also think about like, what does this look like? And it's really important to me for it to look authentic. I mean, I have drunk before. It's not that. It's, and when I did, I'm always the kind of person like, if I've had two glasses of wine, like I'm just going to sleep. I'm going to sleep. There's no jokes being made. There's no fun. There might be a tear shed and then a night in bed.
Wait, you're such a great drunk person on
thank
stage.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I think that I mean, and I practice, like I watch people. I notice, I really am kind of a, I mean, I'm naturally a pretty introverted person.
And no. I don't believe you.
I know, but I mean, my husband can tell you, it's like, I love people, but I kind of feel like it's the Obama-Clinton comparison when they would talk about like, Clinton goes to an event and he's shaking people's hand and it's like, you could see like fire and electricity entering his body and he's like hyped afterwards.
Well, yeah.
Obama goes and shakes their hands and he's just as personable and, passion and all those things, but it's like you're watching a current of electricity leave his body. And so there's just like a, you know, for me, I love people. I'm obsessed with watching them. And, you know, my husband gave me a pair of binoculars because I love bird watching, but then he had to scold me because you're not allowed to watch people out the windows. I know, but I want to see what they're doing all the time. I want to know why do people do what they do? I don't understand them. So I'm like a technician or a scientist.
I understand that. Not allowed to watch people. Literally being in this building with each other, if I hear anybody from the cast, I go straight to the door and I get quiet and I look.
Absolutely. And I'm like, what are they doing? Oh yeah, I'll hear, you know, Mimi and Tess, our lovely stepsisters, are just down the hall and they both have dogs and both their dogs have really different barks. And literally, Sean and I will be sitting in here talking and then I'll be like, there's Gypsy, the dog. And then I'll be like, oh, there goes Joey, must be going for a walk. You know, I'm literally like, I'm listening to the pitter-patter of doggy feet, not and people feet. And
right, like just even on this call, I was like, oh, Ashley just got home. Yeah, I heard her door shut.
Right.
Like, ooh,
that is so- like, there goes Michael McGrath. And I hear Emily Skinner walking by.
You can, you know, hear the
I'm joke so- that I can recognize people because especially in the pandemic and especially in winter, when you walk down the street, you see people, they're in their coats, they're in their masks. And so I like pride myself on being able to recognize someone by their gait. I'm just like, yep, I know those. I know that pacing of walk. I know that stride. And I love it. I mean, I feel like I really try to tune into people, and I'm endlessly confused by why people do what they do. So, and for that reason, I chose an art form where I have to constantly explore and try to make sense of why people do what they do.
When you were talking earlier about like your character and how it's been from here, like and grown and got to where it is today, and listening to you, I hear like I heard the same like voice, like inner monologue of when you're on stage building the show. And I always wondered like, where is this coming from? And now knowing that you are a coach and a teacher, like it makes so much sense the way you look at the piece and the work. It's like through the lens of like really dissecting it.
It is. It is. And I really am passionate about my teaching work. I just hit my 5-year mark this week with the same studio that I've been teaching for in New York. And then I also have my own studio,
which is
Morgan Weed. It's just, you go to my website and you can book lessons with me or book time with me. And I teach voice lessons. I teach dramaturge lessons. I teach monologue research. I teach audition technique. I'll do pretty much anything because I love to customize my work to the person I'm working with. And I work from students from age 5 to, you know, full grown. And I do a lot of college admissions, a lot of high school, art school admissions. And it is such a passion of mine because I had amazing teachers growing up and they gave me the gift of knowledge, but of the technical knowledge and skills of how to actually take the raw materials, which is a love of storytelling and a love of making people laugh, and turn it into a career and turn it into something. And they didn't even do it with the mind that it was a career. Suddenly they're just handing me a Stanislavski book in ninth grade and being like, just read this, come sit in my office and read this. And, and suddenly I'm like, okay. And then they're like, we're taking you to New York for the weekend. We want you to meet this voice teacher. You know, I'm 16 years old and my two fabulous teachers, one of whom was in the original Sideshow on Broadway and the original Cats on Broadway, and the other who had been a director since the 70s in Manhattan. I mean, they had this experience, but I didn't know this. I didn't know, because they're never going to, you know, brag about their own accomplishments. They're just so hyper-focused on me. And my students will tell you, you know, my biggest flaw when I'm teaching is that I'll have like an hour lesson. And suddenly I'll be like, it's been an hour and 45. Like, we have to go. Cause like, I can't charge. I'm not charging you more. Like, I have to call it at some point.
Hang on with them.
I do. I love it. And in the room, you know, I've been doing mostly virtual, but, you know, especially in the room with them too, I want them to have every tool at their disposal. And I do, I come to it from a real dissecting, kind of going, I like to look at, I'm very analytical that way. It's my English major background of being like, okay, here's what we want to accomplish. Here are the five things that we need to do to get that, like knowing that we're looking for this outcome. And teaching just really fits the bill for me. I think at heart. Really,
I get it. I see that.
I'm a director, you know, and I do a lot of direct at heart as well, and a dramaturgist. And, you know, I love the research. I love understanding the inside of it, because the audience is never going to know about that work. They're not going to know. And for my students who go in front of casting directors or, school admissions boards or directors, the idea, just like in a beautiful, you know, a ballet dance at the American Ballet Theater, you know, you're not going like, gosh, she must have worked really hard for this. You're going, oh, she's so effortless. She just flies across that stage.
Right.
But I know, you know, that like the kind of intricate, technical, challenging work that went into that was all to make it look like
it was effortless.
Yeah. And so that's kind of always my goal, is to go, how can I give you every piece of information, all the knowledge that you need, so that when you actually get up there, it's just in you. And I do that for myself too. I'm a preparation queen. I really am. I don't like the unknowns, and I don't like surprises in my real life. Like, do not come at me with a surprise party. Like, I am not
really
to know where it is, when it's going to be, what, you know, what the vibe is. I want all the info.
I want to know when and where it's going to be. Oh my goodness. I love it. Oh. For Princess and the Pea, how much have you had any say of like what your lines are, or like?
Definitely.
The way you come out of your mouth, it definitely seems like you had a say.
You know, it's John Hartmere is such a brilliant writer, and I also feel very connected to him. We've created a really loving friendship over the years that we've known each other. And I was really lucky. You know, I came into this project on kind of a fluke. Somebody had dropped out the day before, and they were doing a reading at the Niederlander's office in New York. And they were like, we need a princess. And this incredible actor, Preston Sadler, who was in the show for many of the iterations and really originated the role of Erudite. He and John knew each other, John Hartmere. And John was like, we need a princess. And like, and essentially was like, we need a weirdo. And Preston texted him, and they showed me this text. Preston was like, you need to call my friend Morgan Weed. And they did. And I showed up that day. And I really feel like it all came down to this weird improv that I sort of did on. And I just gotten the script, and Patrick Vicariello was like, do you think you could sing this song Clumsy, which used to be in the show, because my character used to have a love affair with Clumsy. And we used to come in with our clothes. We had traded clothing, and we were like, what? Nothing. And they're like, what are you wearing? And I'm like, I don't, what do you mean? And then I realized I'm not wearing. And then he just like secretly kind of handed me my bra. And I was like, but I used to sing this song, and here I am in the Niederlander office, like my heart's beating so fast. And he's like, do you think you could just sing this? And I'm like, I know a lot of Britney songs. Like, she and I are almost the same age. I grew up on Britney. And Clumsy was not a song that I knew. It's like a club remix. But somehow my brain was just like, yes. And I'm lucky I had a great teachers of music theory growing up. I read music. So I was able to be like, okay, yes, I can do this. And for a pop song, you know, there's a certain pattern, you know, you're just going to get to repeat that chorus. And, but I made some, you know, all these books fell from the sky and I don't know what came over me, but John had something funny in the script and I ended up like screaming at the top of my lungs, like about Sylvia Plath's The Bell Jar for no reason. And it just kind of stopped the room for a second. And everyone was like, who is this lady? And then they were like, she's in, we're keeping her. And that was it for me. That was like, that cemented my time there.
The day before.
Yeah. And so, John has been so lovely. Like there are lines that he's given me such brilliant lines and he's really tailored if you know his work at all, he gets to know the actor. And I mean, he's got his idea and it's such an incredible mind for creating so many different unique characters, but he really takes into account the way your voice works, you know? So he has customized so much of the script that I, you know, of so many of the P lines, they sound like things
that you say.
And that's, and they have gone through different they've evolved and transformed in like the content will be the same, but he'll change the way it's going to scan verbally, you know? So
I want to take a class. I want to take one of your classes. I would love to work on something and you help me dissect.
I would be so thrilled because I think you are such an incredible actor, performer, storyteller, and I would love to do it. So we'll just have to do that for fun.
So what would you call yourself first? Because you do a lot of things, Morgan, and you're good at.
I'd say dancer first. No. Oh my God, Salisha, don't. I like to say dancer third. I joke that I like to wear a pair of capizios to any dance call so that they're really clear when I walk in the door that I cannot do whatever they're about to ask me to do. Like, I just wanted to be really clear because everyone's like, oh yeah, you want to dress like a dancer. I was like, I dress exactly the opposite of a dancer.
Yes, no. For our audition, Morgan, I did the robot for my freestyle so that Keone and Mari knew. No.
There's a freestyle moment in If I'm Dancing in the show where I just do the robot. Everyone else is doing like cool dances and I'm just doing the robot in the back by myself. Even Jules, our dresser, who's so spectacular from the Shakespeare Theater Company, she goes like, I just watch you every night just do the robot alone. And I'm like, yeah, you know, that's my freestyle move. That's like what I've got. And it's not even good. It's not even a good robot.
Like you know what you're working with. Like there are no surprises. And then they're like, oh, by the way, you got a dance solo for Gretel. I'm like, oh.
Like the entire cast stopped moving. Like nobody moved to their position after that. Because you just exploded. It was as if fireworks burst out of your chest at that moment. It was incredible. So like, actually you can't. And the funny thing is in our world, you know, I've been dancing since I was 3. I was in ballet. I danced on point. I took all the classes. I did all the things and yet somehow doesn't show on the old body, you know, like in a dance number. So I feel like, so I joke about being a dancer first, but I actually on my website, for years, it used to say actor, singer, dancer with wolves. Another Kevin Costner reference. Who knows why? I guess I just like really respond to some of the films he was in the 90s.
I love Kevin Costner.
He's great. I think of myself as an actor first, and I think at my in my true mind,
over
I think,
a comedian.
It what and a comedian? Over, no, over, like, I think comedian first, except that you know. I always tell myself that before I leave this astral plane, like I have to do a stand-up session, you know, and I'm always practicing like different, I mean, it'd be really fun. Right. But that sensitive part of me gets in the way. Cause I go, I'm like, you know, I even in this show, I joke with like Stephen Brower, who's a hilarious comedian himself. I always joke, like, when the audience laughs, I'm like, yes, fill up my bucket. Fill up my bucket with laughter. I'm so hungry. And so I do want to do that. But I definitely, comedy's always the first thing for me. And something I share with my students I say comedy always wins in the room. You know, you can do drama and you can do great storytelling, but even in the darkest of moments, if you can find a way to bring that, like that, to juxtapose that with some, because comedy comes out of drama. It comes out of like conflict a lot of the time. It comes out of saying something really, really horrifying in a really like flippant light tone, or say, or vice versa, saying something really like light and breezy in a really intense melodramatic way. It's about working in opposites. And that's something I work on with my students, about kind of identifying those things. And where can you take something, like practice it just the normal way you might say it, and then go, okay, what happens if I weight this part differently, or lift this part, and, you know, do it 150 times and then you find it. But you don't have to always do it as many times as I do. But I think of myself as a comedian, and I'm really, I'm a researcher, you know, like I'm a dramaturgist in a mind. And I think, you know, as I've done a lot of directing with my students, and I directed my first piece at the Duplex 2 years ago, where a woman approached me. She wanted to do a one woman show, but she didn't know how to. She has this incredible voice, just absolutely incredible, but she didn't exactly know how to construct it. So I wrote her a script, and it was kind of biographical, but interwoven with these songs that were really meaningful to her. And it was a huge success, you know, and it made me feel confident, and suddenly like there was this, you know, that I could combine my love for writing and literature and dramaturgy with my directing. So then I started directing more, and directing showcases in New York at like the 72nd Street Theater, at the Triad, excuse me, and directing people to help get them in front of the gatekeepers, like agents and managers, and trying to identify what helps you get seen, seen in the larger sense of, like, you know, we're there in person, but like what helps you get seen. And there's also this book about called The Four Agreements. Sorry, I was just thinking that. Okay, so this one thing that's really, I kind of balked at this book when it was first handed to me. I was like, oh, this is like living on the mountaintop. How can I like be a human and still work with these like parameters? But then when I really got into this part that says that the one of the agreements is about how it's really just not about you. Like, it's just not personal.
It's not personal.
It has lifted like this weight off of me in such an amazing way. And as a comedian, I suddenly go, yeah, I'm going to try it. I'm going to try it this way. And, you know, there's a line in the show where I have to say, hey, Sin, would it kill you to bring a warm hors d'oeuvre next time? It's not like you don't have the money. So it's like this classist joke on top of this being like, you know, I'm hyper aware that it's like, in our wonderfully diverse cast, it's like two white ladies, like one giving one a hard time about in front of a crowd that have paid like $160 or so for their tickets most of the time. And it's like, you know, and the thing about people with money is they don't really like jokes about people with money. Like, so, you know, every night it's really funny. Michael McGrath is like right off stage, our brilliant narrator. And I meet right after that to change clothes with Jules and Emily and Daisy, our three of our incredible wardrobe team. And every night I either come like kind of crawling off embarrassed about how it hasn't landed, or Michael's like giving me a high five. But, you know, that line is a wonderful exploration for me each night. And it's, you know, it's something nobody else would consider, but I go each night, I'm like, okay, listening to the audience, how they've responded to the first 20 minutes of the show, how like, if I add like some real vulnerability to this, like she's just sleepless and hungry, you know, they love it. Or if I go, oh, I'm getting this different vibe from like this really cackly crowd, I'm just going to go hard at it, you know. And I really, I'm trying to balance the scales all the time, and constantly, you know, listening and trying to make evolved decisions with the live in the moment data that I'm getting. So, but you know, a lot of the lines, there's like, I have my lines, and then I also have some that just belong to me that have been, I've given permission to get in there. Like it's nothing, it's trap. We're nothing, it's trap. I can't even say the line. What is it? And it's funny, 'cause I didn't do it one day. "Oh, we're nothing, we're trash." And Susan was like, "Morgan, you have to do it." And I was like, "Oh," and I was like, "But it's not in the script." And like, I'm really respectful of the script. And John was like, "No, you have to do it." He's like, "I just didn't put it in because, you know, you wrote it." So I'm like, "Okay." Like, so I'm gonna put it in. But, you know, there's other moments like that where he's been like, "Say something along these lines," or, you know, "Give it a try here or there." And it's been really fun to be given that freedom. But I'm also very respectful of the fact that like this show moves quick. Satire is all about timing, and there are special things, particular things that we just don't do. Like, you don't move on someone else's joke. You don't, you know, you gotta make sure that satire is all about rhythm. It's like this, and that. And then this and that. And it has to happen that way. Or things don't land. They don't get the magic. They don't know that they're not getting the magic because the line, you know, the show works. So like, but we can lift it to like this other magical place if we.
Morgan, you are literally magical.
You're literally magical.
You are so magical and so much fun. And my smile has not left my face.
Neither. Thank you.
And like, you're not on social media right now, are you?
No. I just, like I said, that clean living vibe. I just kind of realized like it wasn't doing anything good for my psyche. And I realized, I would take some time off during the pandemic, and it made a big impact on me. How much more time I spend reading and
finding love
in the pandemic, meeting the love of my life and getting married and all those things. And it turns out the world does roll on for me. I'd always had struggle with social media, like what to put up, what not to put up as a private person. I put something up and then 2 hours later I'd be like, "Oh gosh, like I shouldn't have showed the inside of my home or my room." You know, it's just about me and my own sensitivities. And so when I realized I removed that from the playing field of my life, everything got a lot more peaceful. And so for me, it's really working. I'm not saying I'll never come back. And I have my website, which I get a lot of great information from that. People who have come to see the show will message me through the website. And one of them was so cute. He's like, "I just came to see the show last night and I thought it was so amazing. I could see you from the wings during the final number and you're high-fiving Adriana, the little girl." And I was thinking, and we do this every night, the little girls and I, like we high-five during the mega mix off stage and we dance. And I was thinking, you know, it's so meaningful to me to get feedback. And that is one thing that you don't get if you're not easily DMable. And I can't have somebody magical just like slide into my DMs after a 2-minute Zoom call, like about... you know, I met my husband in real life and I feel really blessed that I feel like that was right in line with like, I was clearing the decks for myself. Whereas other relationships I'd been in, not exclusively, but like I had met online or, you know, through a dating app or these things, I felt really lucky that the universe was like, "Look here, meet this person."
I love that. And I love that for you. And he's so sweet and so lovable. And together, you guys, I'm just like, oh, I'm just so happy for you.
I know. I mean, I can't deny it. Like, for the first time in my life, I'm like, oh, no. He is so sweet. And we are so lovable.
No, he is so sweet.
And he takes such good care of me. He's such a loving, kind, gentle, intelligent, warm person. And so I'm very, very blessed and super grateful. I know. And Sean's seeing the show, I think, every night this week because he was like, "We don't know when the next time you're going to be performing it is." He's like, "So I got to soak it all in." And for me, that means that every night that I'm out there, there's this energetic line between us, you know, knowing that my partner is sitting there just like lifting me up. It's really special to me. Yeah. I'm super
lucky. I love that. I'm so happy that you've joined me on the show.
What a joy to be with you today.
I love you. You talked about your website, what is it? So if people do want to reach out to you.
Thank you. It's morganweed.com. So it's just my name and the old .com at the end. And you can reach out to me, send me a message, critique my work. You can also, I'm just kidding. You can book a lesson. We can chat about the world at large. So please, hop on there. And I mean, I really love what I do. And I also feel like with my students, if there's something I can't offer you, I have this incredible pool of colleagues and friends that I feel like are experts at their craft. So if I'm like, you know what, I know someone who's going to teach this exact thing better than I can, so let me refer you to them. So I like to be, if I can help you, I will give you the world. And if I can't, I will get you to someone who can help you explore this incredible art form that we love so much. And that we, you know, I know you and I can say the same. We've dedicated our life to this thing, you know, and it's yeah. really special.
I'm going to be referring people to you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Totally. In fact, I'm going to be signing up for classes with you myself. So thank you for joining me. I love you so much.
I love you, and I'll see you at the show.
I'll see you at the show.
That wraps another episode. Thanks for listening to The Salacia Show. See you next week, and don't be shy. If you love the show, please tell me why. Please rate, subscribe, and leave a review. Go one step further, tell a friend or two. Check out my site if you think it was the bomb. Pay a visit to SalaciaThomas.com. One last thing before I relax. Shout out Josh Carey, and thanks, PodMax. I'm out.
'The Outsiders,' S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.